Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Rachel Bernstein and Alyssa Black, authors of the IBM Center Report, a guide for making innovation offices work. Rachel, your IBM Center Report outlines 7 success factors for building and sustaining effective innovation offices. I'd like to explore each factor. Innovation requires flexibility, adaptability, and change, but it also necessitates institutionalization. Would you explain how essential it is for innovation offices to receive a tangible, steady, and certain commitment of resources from the outset?
Yeah, I think it's hugely important, those real resources. And by resources, we mean time, we mean money, and the right skill set within the office, but also the political buy-in from the top, too. The real resources, it doesn't have to be, these don't have to be large commitments, but without even a small commitment, it's really hard. So the offices that don't have any budget whatsoever are facing much more of a challenge than offices that have even a very small budget. We interviewed someone at the municipal level who's doing this work of innovation in government, and she said, it would have been really nice to have been able to buy donuts for meetings when I had meetings with department heads who were really skeptical about who she was, what the organization was trying to do. Just to be able to meet with them and have some food right, for a meeting would have been really helpful. So even those kinds of small commitments of resources are really important. It also means thinking about the resources that are external to government, partnerships, but also being realistic and understanding that partnerships are not a substitute for those financial or human resources that you need in order to be able to do this work effectively.
Alyssa, government innovation offices have a wide range of priorities and underlying missions. So how critical of a success is it to create a specific mission and tie it to a specific impact?
I think it's critical. I think it gets at a number of the issues that we've topics that we've discussed today around successful innovation offices. But a clear mission and specific mission that's tied to impacts helps with getting buy-in. So when your elected official or your top executive understands clearly what your mission is, and then what measurements and how you're going to measure yourself and impact outcomes that you want from that, it's easier to get their buy-in and their endorsements. I think it also helps with public perception. So being very clear about the intent of the innovation office and maybe even how it relates to other offices and other work that you're doing either in your city or in your federal agency, I think that being very clear and specific about the mission helps with that. I think it also helps with understanding and evaluating who the right partners should be and what resources you need from those partners, or evaluating whether the partners have the right resources and whether you should be partnering with them. And I think the last point around specific and clear missions, and then mostly tied to the impacts and really looking at how you're measuring those impacts, gets at the accountability piece. Because innovation offices are still fairly new, it's important that they prove themselves. And so you can look at some short-term wins and then maybe longer-term goals that you're wanting to seek and go after. But having those specific impacts that you're measuring yourself against along the way helps with accountability, and I think ultimately helps with the sustainability of the office over time.
Alyssa, I'd like to continue. How critically important is effective communication at all stages of the innovation lifecycle?
It's, again, another critical success factor. I think all of the success factors that we listed are really important and critical. We tried not to list too many so that we could talk about them all. But clear communication, and this holds true, even outside of innovation offices, but helps to build trust and, again, facilitate those viable partnerships and set the expectations. And so, innovation is difficult. It can be incremental, which oftentimes means that it's not highly visible, but it's it's difficult. It's things like we discussed earlier, culture change, public engagement. And so a lot of that, it takes time. And so clearly communicating what the innovation life cycle, what that life cycle looks like, and then where you're at any point in that life cycle will also, again, help with all those other kind of critical success factors like getting buy-in and understanding and clearly communicating to the public what the office is doing. And so I think we also, in the report, we call out that communication must also be directed at the right audiences, especially the partners and those that are targeted by the Innovation Office mission and government workers impacted by the Innovation Office's work. And so being very clear with people who you might want to build partnerships with internally and externally is very important.
And Rachel, why should innovation officers initially aim to form a coalition of the willing?
Yeah, so this was actually a phrase that we heard again and again throughout our interviews. We quote Jeff Friedman, who is the co-founder and former co-director of Philadelphia's mayor's Office of New Urban Mechanics, citing this idea of the coalition of the willing, but others mentioned it as well. The advice that we heard from people was that it wasn't worth the expenditure of time and other resources to try to convince skeptical department heads initially of the importance of partnering with the Innovation Office, but rather to work with people within government who are committed partners and who are excited by the mission and the opportunity to work on projects together. And so after these initial quick wins, it was much easier, people told us, to be able to position their offices as worthy of investment by other departments. So initially established this coalition of the willing, and then after that broaden the reach to other partners within government. That was what we heard again and again.
Alyssa, you point out in the report that there's no one entity that catalogs government innovation offices or that facilitates communication between them. Given this reality, would you explain why it is critically important to seize those opportunities to share lessons and information emerging from government innovation offices through, say, informal and formal networks?
Yeah, I think as with any emerging field, it's important to identify best practices and freely share lessons learned and even failures so that people can learn from those failures. And so it's important to set up and identify those knowledge sharing networks where that exchange of information might occur. And so while there is not one entity that catalogs government innovation offices, there are a few organizations like Nesta based in the UK who recently put out a report around their iTeams, which are innovation teams. And so that report really looks at a global landscape of innovation offices and innovation projects. And so again, it's not a ongoing catalog of innovation offices, but it's similar to our report. It's a snapshot in time around what's happening at a global scale. The Bloomberg Philanthropies Innovation Delivery Teams, those grantees, as there are more and more cities that participate in that process, they're really developing an alumni network where there can be shared lessons across those innovation projects, and then in those cities where they have innovation offices, there's some shared learnings that could be shared across those cities. And I'll just point out a network that seems to be vibrant and where information can be shared is the Presidential Innovation Cohort. So at the federal level, there is often some sharing that's going on around the innovation process and hopefully discussion around failures and best practices. And then Code for America has a network called the Peer Network, which operates mostly at the local level, but I think can move up into state and federal, which talks about kind of how do you innovate on a variety of different issue areas. And so it is important to nurture networks, both formal and formal. Earlier in this conversation, Rachel had mentioned some of the research that we did that led up to us kind of exploring this chief innovation officers and innovation offices within government. And a lot of that was around the innovation process and how information is shared between governments. And it typically happens in a very informal way that's based on trust And so bringing together people to have conversations about best practices, about emerging practices, and particularly around this new kind of innovation movement is I think really critical in the evolution of the innovation office and making sure that it becomes a viable, sustainable part of the way that government works in the 21st century.
And Rachel, why is it so critical that researchers continue their work to understand the innovation process within government and to evaluate strategies for realizing it?
Yeah, I think because there's been so much activity in this area just in the last 5 years alone, and as governments are considering creating new offices, that it's really important to understand what's been done in the past and what's currently being done so that governmental entities can really learn from others that are already doing this work so that they're not reinventing the wheel each time. And so I think that research like this report, but also some of the other resources that Alyssa mentioned and, you know, further work to come will really be important in terms of capturing some of those lessons learned, because I think without that, governmental officials don't really have good guides or good networks for understanding what's happening, and as a result, it makes it frustrating to create innovation offices that work. So I think particularly as evaluative strategies and specific metrics emerge as these offices mature, there will be more data that those who are considering creating these offices or improving existing offices can draw on. And researchers, external researchers, but also people within government themselves can play a big role in highlighting and analyzing some of those data.
Well, Rachel and Alyssa, I want to thank you for joining me today, but more importantly, I'd like to thank you for your research for the IBM Center.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. We really enjoyed it and appreciate the opportunity to share some of what we're learning.
This has been a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Rachel Bernstein and Alyssa Black, authors of the IBM Center Report, A Guide for Making Innovation Offices Work. You may order or download a free copy of this or all Center reports at businessofgovernment.org. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.